This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I did the last time we did this, I had Morgan Freeman sitting next to me. We did it in pairs.
So I remember that.
Yeah.
And they paired Katie Holmes with Michael Caine.
Yes.
He did all the talking.
Did he?
Yeah, that's why they paired
her with him. Yeah, well, things have changed.
So Jim Gordon has a much bigger role in The Dark Knight than he did in Begins. Is that something that you sort of agitated for, to like get your character to sort of have more to do this time around?
No.
You are tremendously into.
I'm the real sort of moral kind of center of the piece, really. I mean, he's a sort of the ultimate. He is the ultimate good guy,
right.
You know. But I didn't campaign for it. I'm at the mercy of what Chris Nolan writes, and I think we had a good time working on the first one. And I'd like to think that. He liked working with me, and thought that I could carry it and pull it off. But I was very thrilled when he sent me the script. I thought, oh, yeah, I've got more to do. Yeah.
Compared to the first film, was it the same kind of feel on the set? Was it more structured? Was it, you know, following storyboards? Could you talk about it? What it was
no,
like?
You never see storyboards. I mean, it's very unusual. It's one of the... A movie of this size, of this scale, you normally have a second unit director, and Chris shoots everything, because his feeling is that it's the action. You know, it's as much a part of the movie as anything else. So he thinks, why is it? It's weird that I direct the actors and I do all this dialogue, and then someone else, another director, goes off and makes this other bit of the movie. So. He shoots the movie and the second unit and the whole thing. I've never seen a storyboard. I'm sure that they exist, or some of them do. The great thing about Chris is that he's so prepped. He doesn't shout, he doesn't scream. I've never seen him lose his temper. You start the movie day one, day 147. You come back and he doesn't look tired. I don't know how he kind of does it, but he just goes, "Hey, how are you? Great. How's it going? It's great. Got some great stuff. Yeah, flipped a truck last night. Okay, stand over there. Let's, you know." I mean, it's like, you know, so a very pleasant guy to be around. And you're home for tea, and you put the kids to bed. So you are you do a day's work, and you're home for dinner. Who could want for anything more?
Were you in any of the IMAX shot scenes? And if so, did you notice any difference in working with
Noisier camera?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the size of a washing machine. Yeah. A noisy camera, and there's a booklet that there's a booklet that comes with the IMAX of how to act. You have to make it really subtle because it's going to be so much bigger.
So you're getting notes from a booklet.
Yeah, and makeup of the whole thing, gestures. Make the gestures smaller. You know, yeah. There's a whole sort of manual that comes with the IMAX camera.
Did you take any of it to heart?
I couldn't be small if I tried.
In the first film, you got to drive the Batmobile, but you didn't get to do anything.
No, I didn't get. I didn't get to do anything.
Was there something fun?
Oh, I did. I drove the SWAT car.
Okay.
Is you?
Is me. Yeah. Chris said, you know, I'd like you to come in and do it, even though we probably won't see you. He said. So, I mean, it's amazing that. The city of Chicago give Chris the permission to just sort of kick the hell out of it like that. Those are real stunt drivers and real cars, and I mean, he really flipped that truck and crashed that helicopter, and he doesn't really like to use a lot of CGI. The explosion is a real explosion. I mean, that's a building blowing up with Heath walking out of it. That's really blowing up behind him, that building. And, of course, Chris tells a great story. He says that before you cut, I mean, obviously he cut, but the take
was bringing Heath out the building, walking across this car park, then the building sort of blowing up in pieces behind him, and then the whole thing blowing up. Heath walks and gets onto a bus, and the camera follows, and as it pulled away out of the car park, there was like a first AD who was in there on a walkie-talkie, and he says, and you see Heath turn at the very end of the shot going, one more. but we're not going to do that again. No, you don't get another one. So there's a lot of one takes.
Yeah,
there are a lot of one take things. You know, they flipped that truck and that was it. You know, that was one take deal. And Chris said, I don't really want to use CG. I want to flip an 18 wheeler. And he said to the special effects guy, he said, now go away and make it work.
What was working with Heath like?
Heath?
Yeah.
They're wonderful. Yeah. It's. I was saying earlier that they're actors that are, they go along in a career, and it's as if they're sort of, it's as if they're travelling at sort of subsonic speed. And then you'll get a movie like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, or you'll get Dog Day Afternoon, and actors like Nicholson and Pacino go through the sound barrier. They don't do it every time, but an actor in a career will do that, if they're lucky, if they're good. And Heath's gone through the sound barrier with this. I think it's an extraordinary piece of acting, and he was sort of... there's a frequency he was sort of tuning into, like a broadband or something. You know, he was like tuning something, and he found something. Like he tuned into a station that none of us could hear. Mm. You know,
when you read the script the first time and you see that Commissioner Gordon gets shot, and we all assume, you know,
yeah.
Were you kind of surprised, or was there notes saying that's not really what's going on here, or were you just as surprised as us as the audience watching?
No, I wasn't surprised because they're already talking about the third one.
And what are they saying about the third one?
So I read, oh, he's shot, he's dead. Yeah, well, he's got to come back. I don't know what they're going to talk about. I don't know what they're going to say about the third one. Chris Nolan you'll see Chris today. Is he coming in?
Yeah.
Yeah, he comes in, and then you'll say, are you going to do the sequel? And he sits here and he goes, I don't know, I'm kind of tired, I'm going to go on holiday, which I think is code for yes.
So they haven't even given you a heads up like, hey, we're going to shoot it in summer of 2009 or anything like that?
No. I think he'll go and he'll go away and work the story. I mean, it's the way he did this one, he got together with, I think his brother, but his brother then later wrote the screenplay, but he got together with a guy called David Goyer. Mm-hmm. And they sit around and they thrash out the story, the plot. And they sort of say, what are we scared of, you know, like in the world? What like really scares us? Wouldn't it be great if we made the Joker do this and this happened? And they just throw all these ideas around. They get a story roughly of what they want. And then he hands it over to his brother. I mean, Chris is a great writer in his own, you know, in his own right. But they got the story together and then they gave it to the brother. And they said, you know, kind of flesh it out. It's very luxurious. It's a great way to work. I can't think of a better way to work.
What was your Gordon? You know? Do you think of him as a? He seems like the only optimist. Like he's the only one that, you know, believes that his fellow officers are actually good, even when, you know, Aaron Eckhart's character is telling him, "No, they're all corrupt.
Yeah.
I know this."
I think he knows that they're corrupt, but I think he's a great poker player. Mm. I think Gordon's a great poker player, and he even says at the end, I mean, I think he has enormous admiration for Batman at the end, because he does say people will lose hope and everything was riding on this, and then Batman says, but I killed those people, I'll take the fall for it. And that shows that's in a great character. that shows great character in someone that can that can do that. I think he has an incredible amount of admiration for him at that point. And if there is a third movie, it'll be interesting because he does openly work with Batman, even though he says to the DA, you know, the really the thing is that you arrest the vigilante Batman on sight. I mean, that's, but he does work with, he does openly work with him, and he trusts him because he gives over a crime scene to Batman over the police officers and his detective. And he says, look, you know what? No one's looking. You can have 5 minutes with the crime scene. But there is that policy that he's a vigilante and that he's kind of not working with him. He works with him, but he's kind of not working with him. And now, if there's a third one, he has to openly, publicly hunt him and chase him. But he'll have to meet with him covertly.
Mm-hmm. But also, in theory, your character will trust his fellow police officers even less than he did before, I would guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really is a very honest, incorruptible, virtuous character in a system that is very very corrupt.
But I like that he's also very sneaky. And the
but he has to be.
He has to be.
Yeah.
But and he does have this one fatal flaw. I mean, Two-Face would not happen if these cops on Gordon's squad lets go and hadn't set up Maggie and I mean. I just love this movie. It's just
it's so morally murky. It's so what?
It's so morally murky. Everything.
Yeah.
Everybody. It's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's this debate that goes through for comic fans whether or not Gordon knows who Batman is after years of working together. Sort of from your point of view, does Gordon care who Batman is?
No, I don't think he does. Yeah. And I don't. And yeah. Where is that? In a comic? Is it,
well,
is
in the comic, every now and again, there's always like some storyline where maybe Gordon has figured it out because after working with him for so long, how could he not sort of begin to wonder? But I was wondering.
I don't know. I think Gordon thinks that Batman is George Clooney.
why is that?
Now, aren't you in Uriah Goyer's next movie? Right.
I am.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? About working with him?
That was great working with him. Yeah. I can't really... It's a horror movie, and I play a rabbi.
All right.
There you go.
I wanted to know, you've been rumored to be in A Christmas Carol, the Zemeckis scene.
I am.
Could you talk a little bit about working in that environment, that CGI?
Someone said that they think... That people have said it, that it's like theatre. But often the people that have never done theater say it's like working. They go, "It's like working in theater, isn't it, Gary?" And you go, "No, it's nothing like theater. It's basically, it's sort of like being in a movie. It's like making a movie, but without the brights and the costume."
Okay.
But it's a weirdest thing because he will you perform the scenes much like you would a play. And there's like 200 cameras in the room, and you don't wear a costume, and you wear dots on your face, and Zemeckis will make the movie in the computer later.
Do you act? I know Jim plays a lot of parts. Do you have a lot of scenes together? Are there a lot of actors together, or is it you by yourself?
Oh yeah, you're with the thing, and I play Marley, I play Tiny Tim, and I play Bob Cratchit.
Wow.
So I play Siri. Yeah.
You mentioned a minute ago that you felt that Heath was be able to tune into something. Certain actors could get very methodical. You know, Christian Bale is a very method actor. After they would cut, was Heath still the Joker for a while?
No. I mean, you know, you get a little... If you're that intense and you're playing a role like that, there's an energy or on the set. You know, and people get into it. I mean, Jim Carrey is pacing up and down, getting into an emotional scene, and you can't fuck with him because he's off in the corner trying to sort of get into it. Or you take a moment and you say, you know, Francis Ford Coppola says to you, you know, I want you to weep in this scene. Yeah, you're going to go off into a corner and think about terrible things. I don't know. You know what I mean? And you're focused on something, But, you know, what you get with Heath is, you know, he is so committed to the role. And you look at De Niro's work, and if anything, you watch a movie like Raging Bull, and whether you think it's good work or bad work, you've got to admire the commitment to it. The commitment to the work, to gain £60 to play Jake LaMotta. Mm-hmm. That has to be applauded, you know. And Heath is completely committed to this character. And there's and so free when he works, you know. It was just like a freedom. Often it's shot differently, because I think Chris just said, let's put it on the Steadicam, or let's put it on the handheld and see what he does. Just wind him up and let's see what he does. And there's a real sense of sort of danger there. I think that really comes across. But we would cut, and I would sit on the sidewalk with him, and he would have a cigarette and laugh and joke and talk about Matilda. You know, people want to believe that the Joker contaminated him, and that you'd have to have a neurological disorder to, you know what I mean? I've played a lot of weird, wacky characters in my time, and I've always managed to get to sleep. You know what I mean? But people want a darker story there than there really is, I think. Christian's still alive, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Yeah. So, just an accident, sadly. But I think he's probably. I think he's looking down from heaven, as my my fiance said, and you know, he's looking down, going, "They're going to nominate me for an Oscar." You're kidding me. So, you know, bad timing. But, you know, but I think he will, and I think the work will really get recognised. And this genre doesn't normally get, for some reason, doesn't get recognised because people don't sort of take it seriously enough. I mean, what people don't understand, that it's as hard to costume a movie like Michael Clayton as it is to costume Dracula or Jane Eyre. It's just as hard. You've got to get the right suit, the right shirt. Should it be cotton? That tie doesn't work with that. Is the cardigan right? Should she wear a short skirt? Should it be a three-quarter skirt? I mean, even though you're going out and buying the clothes, there's the same skill that goes into it. But of course, the Academy never acknowledge anything. You know, they'd never give a best costume Oscar to Michael Clayton. And so they never sort of take the acting in these movies seriously. You know, I think the last time they did was Tony Hopkins. They gave him an Oscar for a horror movie. You know, so I think that they will acknowledge this and take it seriously on the strength of the performance, not because it's a sort of a posthumous Oscar and that it's not a sympathy vote because he's dead. So I'd like to see it. I think he's wonderful in it, isn't he?